It's time to wake up and pray up here on the Finding Faith and Losing Sleep podcast. I'm Wes Easley, one of your hosts, and I'm always joined by the real star of the show, Pierre Wilson, and his wife, Michelle Wilson. How are y'all doing tonight?
I have no star, I can tell you that.
Me either, but we're good, Wes.
What do you mean no stars? Come on, man. You guys were sitting out there. I saw pictures where you guys were sitting out there under the stars looking at the eclipse happening there in your neck of the woods. That had to be pretty cool. I didn't see anything down here in good old Alabama.
That was nice. Cool. I was surprised. Like, I was kind of like going into it, it was like a meh type of situation, if I'm being honest. Like, I wasn't too thrilled. I wanted to see it some, but the moment it covered fully, the totality, like, that was special, just how dark it got, but how bright it still was with the darkness, how cold, like, the temperature dropped. It was pretty surreal. So that was cool. What wasn't cool were all the people that traveled to our city.
Yeah.
Like, on Friday night, like, pizza places stopped taking orders at, like, 8 o'clock. Like, they were just so packed, and hotels were expensive, like you were, like, in Vegas or something like that, so... I'm not wanting to be in a tourist town. I can tell you that much, just based off what happened with the eclipse.
And you know,
cool though.
It was people talk about these things, and they try to lead people into conspiracies and stuff like that. And it all makes sense of why states would call in the National Guard or a state of emergency before it all happens. And they can judge these things by how many hotel bookings they have, you know, and how many planned people are coming into the neighborhoods and the areas. And you're just going to need a little bit more support during that time. So the government does make sense sometimes in what they do.
Well, and I think we were a little busier because a lot of areas that were in the path of totality ended up having a lot of cloud cover, and we did not. So
one of the things, though, that I thought about during the eclipse is how, if you didn't, you know, I would want to say that we are more educated than our ancestors. Now, that may not be true. There's a lot of things to think about, like the caveman and all those kind of people being maybe a little bit more intelligent than what we give them credit for. And I just can't imagine, though, what it would be like way back when maybe you didn't have the technology to know that the moon and the sun, and you didn't have a month's warning or something like that, how they had it all on the news and everything. And then all of a sudden, one day, it just gets dark right there. Could you imagine?
He's so scary.
You would think it's over, probably. You think this is it. And probably turn to prayer if you were a praying person. Like, what's happening right now?
Well, I'm pretty sure I heard, and I could be wrong, and I would have to look it up, but I think I heard on K-Love that the word eclipse stems from the meaning of the word comes from the word abandon, the Greek word maybe, of abandon is what it means. So they probably felt like they were abandoned in that moment, like, what the world is happening? I also saw, Wes, that people were... kind of drawing the line between that and like the stone rolling away, like how similar that would look.
Yeah. And I could see that because the shape of everything being circular and then just kind of going from dark to light and all that stuff. Could you imagine too, if you coupled the eclipse with like an earthquake happening like it did in what, New Jersey, I think it was. And then all of a sudden, then there's an eclipse like the next day or however. It wasn't very long. I mean, your whole world would be coming to an end, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
That is for sure. We talk about that, like just the – how many people really kind of take into account like the old olden days where like none of this technology and stuff existed. Like we even talk about like not even knowing what you look like yourself. You think like without like a mirror or like a reflection on water, you have no idea. What you even would have looked like. So like probably no body shaming or anything along those lines or call you ugly. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't have any idea if you were attractive or not.
No,
maybe the attention they got.
How you doing? I wouldn't want to know. I wouldn't want to know how I looked. And then that way I just always walk around thinking that I was the cat's meow. Right. I think that's That's how you say. Speaking of old books, today we're going to talk about Job, the book of Job. And the reason why we're going to revisit it. I know we talked about it before on some previous episodes here and there, but I'm going through this Audible book, right? The Audible Bible. Is that how you say that? Year in a plan, plan in a year, year in a plan. And I'm going through that Bible, and it just sounded different. It hit different going through somebody reading it to me and me listening to it with the earbuds on. And it just hit a little bit different. So I texted you, Pierre, and I said, hey, let's cover the book of Job. And especially those last chapters wherever God is answering and responding to Job. So Job is like the very first book that we're going to say the oldest book in the Bible. That's what a lot of people always say is the oldest book in the Bible. It was written before, I guess, the documentation, the manuscripts. It's the oldest recorded book, all right? So it's not before Genesis and parts of Genesis. But what I'm working through is actually a chronological view of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so let me tell you guys this. This version, I don't even know what version it is. I'm not good with technology myself. So I probably, you could have told me that there was going to be an eclipse and I wouldn't even know it, even though I have all this technology in front of me, because I just mash buttons. All right. And so I am listening to this audio Bible and I don't know what version it is or anything, but it's just really cool. And it puts the book of Job right after the Tower of Babel. In the book of Genesis. Okay. So that's where it slotted the chronological part of Job. And I got to thinking about that. I got to wondering, huh? So yeah, it makes sense that Job wasn't written before the beginning of the world. Okay. That makes sense, right?
Yeah. I guess a little bit.
And it probably makes sense that Job was after Adam and Eve, the first people that recorded in the Bible. Okay. That makes sense too. And then through the family, through Noah and through the destruction of the earth through the flood, right? And then it gets to the Tower of Babel, and then boom, that kind of does make sense. It makes a little bit of sense that maybe Job got to where was he? The land of Uz is, I think, where he was, because he was kind of scattered abroad, maybe not him personally, but his family was scattered abroad after the Tower of Babel.
It's quite possible, and I know we've talked about it, but I just struggle with the whole book. And I mean, we won't go back into all the details, but you'll see kind of how we discuss the end here. I believe is more of like the finale of kind of what he went through. But just a struggle for me on kind of how this whole book played out, how things played out for Job, you know, highs, lows, high, kind of like that sandwich technique where you had the bread and you had the stuff in between, then you had some more bread at the end. But we'll dive into it, and I'm sure I'll share plenty of thoughts on it.
Does he have a lot of thoughts, Michelle, on this?
Oh, he does on this one for sure. This is probably one we've talked about more than most, for sure.
This stuff is the stuff that keeps him up at night thinking, huh? Until you act like you're going to say something, then all of a sudden he's snoring. I know how Pierre plays that game. I know
you're
how he plays
right.
Yes. So he's living in the land of Uz, and I kind of had this revelation as I was listening to this. Okay. And it may not be anything new, and I may have shared it with you before. Can I back up a little bit?
Sure.
Can I tell you guys about whenever I was a young Christian, right? Just out of the baptismal womb, you could kind of say, okay.
Okay.
I don't know if it's ever been said like that, but I did. And
I'll turn it back now.
We used to have, these scripture readings at the beginning of church. And they asked me to read the scripture. This guy said, hey, you can read the scripture. You know, now you're a baptized believer, you can read scripture. I said, okay, yeah, no problem. I'll be happy to do it. I'm always a guy who doesn't understand the severity of the situation, so I'll just do something, right? And he gave me this book of Job to read in front of the thing. Now it's just one chapter or just like five verses or something, whatever the chapter he was preaching that day. And so he just gave me this little snippet to read, right? So I got up in front of the congregation, and I don't know diddly do about anything, about the Bible especially. So I got up there, and I got my book turned open, Book of Job, and I get up there in front of everybody, and I look out at the crowd just like you're supposed to. I do a good job with that. And I said, today I'll be reading from the Book of Job. Chapter. That's where I walked into my Christian life. You know, I didn't know it. Hey, it looks like Job, doesn't it? I mean, that I didn't mispronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
No, it didn't even give me a heads up. I was wondering if that's kind of like an initiation into the church is what it was.
There you go. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how it looks. That's how most would pronounce it if you haven't if you hadn't heard it elsewhere.
Very true.
So that's how the book kind of kicks off. Is you got Job being here, and he's a great man in the land of Uz. And the way I pictured the book of Job this time was it's kind of like a play, Michelle, where it's this physical reality realm and then a spiritual realm. But with us being able to read the entirety of Job instead of just seeing it kind of happen as it goes, you get this physical element of Job where at the beginning of it, it tells us he's living in the book of Uz and he's got all these kids. He's a reputable man. He's got all this money. He seems to be a man of high prestige and honor here in the city. So we're looking at that physical thing if you're looking at Job from a place perspective. But then the scene changes, and then we get to see the spiritual realm that where things are going on that we don't necessarily know what's going on. From our physical standpoints that we're in right now. But there's a spiritual world, a spiritual realm that we just can't even see, and there's stuff that's going on there. So I envisioned it like a play where I kept looking at this physical realm that Job and his friends and his family were in, and then there was a spiritual realm where we see God and Satan, and then at the end of the book, we also see God again replying. God, of course, is intermingling in between the physical and the spiritual realm. And so is Satan, it seems like, Michelle.
It does. And it feels like Pierre struggles with this because he's like, it's like Satan was like, hey, you should do this. And God's like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, I think I will. And like, that just frustrates Pierre to no end. And I have to say, I understand it. It is perplexing for sure. And it's odd for us to see, and I think it's hard for us to wrap our brains around. I guess you just kind of have to go to the place where God knows more than we do, and he understands what that purpose truly was, and we may never know it until we can go ask him. But it's crazy for sure.
Pierre, when that happens, when you know you see Job in his physical realm, and he gets attacked by Satan, right? And I mean, everything just starts, his world starts collapsing on him and just starts collapsing in on him a little bit. And then it says, Pierre, that, and I bring this up with you because you and I have been friends now for a long time, and we've been through some things together, actually, just on a personal level. He gets surrounded by his friends, by three of his friends, and they just sit in silence for like 7 days. Now, you know I wouldn't be able to do that for 7 days, Pierre, but they just sit there in silence. And then when Job finally says something after, and I guess I got to back up a little bit, because Job's world craters in on him. God allows Satan, if you haven't read this, you need to go back and read, like start the book of Job and just start reading, and you'll just trip you out. And we have other episodes talking more about this later, talking more about this in earlier past episodes. Job just, everything gets taken away. All his children get taken away. All his riches get taken away. The only thing he's left with is his wife. I mean, he lost like, what, 7, 9 children, something like that. I can't even remember how many it is. And just an upright guy. And I'm sure Job had to be sitting there, Pierre, like, what in the world happened to me? What happened? What did I do? And then his friends surround him, and they just sit in silence. And then when they broke their silence, Job was just talking about how he wished he was never born. You know, we talk about Job being a strong man and a faithful man, and those things are true. But at this point, the very first things he says out of his mouth is that he wishes he would have never have been born. You know, he said, if there were people who are good at cursing, I wish they would just curse the day I was born, is what he said. Pierre, how do you handle a situation like that with somebody whose life is just turning in on them? You seem to be a lot better at being able to be silent and just being with people than I am.
Well, I think it's tough. And again, this book is a struggle because you think about the stature. So think about where he was in life. Things were going really well. And from everything we're told, he was doing things the right way. He was a righteous man. So put yourself in his shoes. whether it's you, Wes, whether it's, you know, the listener listening to this, put yourself in the shoes that you're living life right, quote unquote. Things are going well for you. You know, you're trying to do God's work as well in the process. And then it's all just taken away in an instant. Now, what we see is basically the devil, Satan, trying to basically convince God that, you know, Job's going to not be the guy he is. He's not going to be that righteous man once all his stuff's removed from him, once all his people are taken away, all his things, his property. He's not going to be the man that you think he is. And again, the struggles that, like you said, God allows it, for one, allows Satan to kind of take all these things from Job and not touch him. But just being in that situation, why would you want to live? It'd be really hard, right? So yeah, you want that be removed, because you're doing, I know the Bible, we don't know where the Bible was in this point, but if you're doing in today's world what the Bible says to do, you're living a good life, you're righteous, you're doing everything you believe you should be doing, and you're a godly man, and everything gets taken away, it's hard to cope with that. It's hard to adjust with that. So yeah, you would definitely want to be, I think, cursed in that moment. Everything got taken away from you, so you kind of want to be taken away from the situation yourself.
Well, I think that basically the whole gist of this chapter, Job, in and of itself is like, you know, it's confusing to us, but we just have to trust God even when we don't understand him. And even when he's like thoroughly confusing to us, we that's kind of the point, is that we don't understand it, but we still have to trust.
Yeah.
But it's hard. And then the silence, like sometimes there's just not words in situations when you see loved ones, friends going through a hardship. There are situations where nothing you're going to say in that moment's going to take away the pain or going to make that person feel better. But being there and just sitting there so they can see that you're there. If ever there's a time that they decide to talk about it, you're right there. But you're not forcing it. You're not, you know, rushing them into saying something they may not want to say or saying something wrong because they feel pressured to say it. You're just kind of sitting in peace to some extent.
It's true.
When there's no words that are going to come out of your mouth that are going to make that situation better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's right. And obviously, his friends didn't help the situation much at all. Because whenever Job would get done going through, you know, his just, I wish I was never born, his friends would be like, well, yeah, because you've obviously done something wrong. That's the only reason why all this is happening to you, because you are keeping some kind of sin secret between you and God. And mm-hmm. and they're pointing their finger. But here's where this spiritual and physical realm come into play. They're just looking at it from they're trying to make the spiritual realm and the physical realm match, but that's mm-hmm. not at all what was going on. We know the story, and we know that's not why Job was going through what he was going through. We know that story. But we see it in the physical realm as, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And his friends saw it like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. He's done something wrong, and so God is punishing him. But God wasn't punishing Job. He wasn't punishing him. He was allowing it to happen, but it wasn't a punishment for something that Job had done wrong. It was more of a encouraging thing for all of us that get to read it afterwards and get to see the play out. We get to see that somebody can be strong through a lot of bad things that happen to them in their life, and they aren't necessarily being punished for anything. Job wasn't punished, you know, but that's not how his friends looked at it. So that's that play thing that I was talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, if anything, you're gonna try to reason why something's happening in this world. That's just human nature. You'd be like, okay, well, maybe this took place, or maybe that happened. If someone gets mad at you, that has no right or no reason to be mad at you, you're still going to be thinking, what did I do to make this person upset? And you're going to start thinking back. And it could be nothing at all, but that's still just going to be the human nature. So if you see someone going through a hardship, let's say a homeless person on the street, we're going to assume that something took place that put them in that situation. That's just human nature. We don't know what that's going to be. We're going to make assumptions. I know people make assumptions that, you know, they want money for drugs. They want money for alcohol. Those are all assumptions that are made based off someone's circumstances. And the friends, quote unquote, in this situation, were doing the same to Job, that clearly, given what your lifestyle was and where you're at now, you clearly had to do something wrong from a sin standpoint, upsetting God type of situation.
Job says something interesting in all that, where he says a lot of interesting things, and so do his friends, right? But Job says, you know, I'm just like a hired hand, is kind of what he says. And he just says, I'm just supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. I got to do what's right. And in some recovery process classes that I taught, that I went through myself, you know, it's always, you got to do the next right thing. Even if you think you messed up, even if you think you've done something wrong, or even if somebody's done something wrong to you, ask yourself this question: what's the next right thing to do? Mm-hmm. And then do it. And you know, if all your intentions are trying to do the right things, you're going to stumble upon doing the right things, even if you accidentally do the wrong thing sometimes. You know, you're if you're practicing the right things over and over and over again, people are going to know that you are practicing those right things over and over and over again. And that's what you're going to be known for. Even if there is a slip up there, even if an intention of a right thing turns out to be a wrong thing to do, it's still trying to do the right things, and you're just piling up the right things whenever you're trying to do them. That's what I think Job is trying to do while he's sitting down here going, I just wish I didn't have to make this decision.
Well, and you think about, so think about it like from like a, let's say, police officer standpoint. When you're driving out on the road, are you following rules to follow them, to do the next right thing? Or are you following rules thinking that, you know, an officer's around and you might get in trouble for not stopping at that stop sign, or stopping at that stoplight, or for speeding, or not having your seatbelt on? If you make it a habit of just doing those right things, odds are you're not going to get pulled over. If you're doing it just to not get caught, odds are you're going to eventually get caught.
Mm-hmm. I'm not one to ask about rules for the police officers and laws and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I drive down the middle of the road here. I'm just going to be honest with you. I do. But I drive the bread trucks a lot of times. And so, yeah, I give myself a little bit of clearance over there on the right-hand side. So I think of them more as suggestions. Yeah. And I'm trying to abide by the rules, but I'm also going, well, they did that so everybody could be safe. And a bread truck riding real close to that yellow line over there on my right-hand side ain't very safe. You know, that's just what I'm thinking.
You just said you tried to abide by the rules. So just that alone is going to put you in better situations than those that don't and are just simply trying not to get caught.
Okay. If I get pulled over for that, I'll let them know that you told me I could.
That's right.
How about that? So throughout all this, Job starts questioning God and really petitioning God in the book of Job. And he starts, you know, just begging him, just tell me what's wrong. Just tell me the answer. Just do whatever it is I have to do. Just end my life, or just do something, God. You know, he just kind of starts doing that. And then we see in that spiritual realm that God had been hearing all of these things. And then all of a sudden, the Lord starts challenging Job, kind of answering Job. Now, keep in mind, during all this, Job is having some dreams, too. It says where his world is getting shaken. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if God wasn't communicating with Job throughout some of those dreams, where Job is just like terrified and in a panic, or maybe even, we don't know, maybe Satan is doing something in those dreams, too, where Job's just waking up, just where he doesn't know what's going on. And those dreams are very real to him. I'm not a big dreamer. I don't dream really hard to where I I couldn't remember them or anything. I don't know if you guys like have those kind of dreams where they're just real, real dreams. I guess every once in a while when I'm trying to fall asleep, I'll be sitting there and, you know, you'll be trying to fall asleep and then all of a sudden you're falling or something. And then just before you hit something, bam, you kind of just, your whole body just shakes and you wake up. It's like, what in the world just happened? You know, it's like, I'm glad I woke up because that was obviously going to hurt. But I don't have like dreams like that. I don't get into a real REM sleepy kind of thing. I don't know. What do you guys do?
I mean, I have in my past, I probably, and some of them have been very real. Like one that sticks out for me for sure is when I was in high school, my room was across from my parents' room and I heard like a scream and I woke up and I thought I woke up and walked across the hall and both my parents were murdered. And of course I screamed in my sleep apparently. And I thought I woke up from the dream and my mom was there. And then all of a sudden she wasn't. And I got up and walked and saw the same thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's real. And then I actually woke up. Like, it was crazy. It was like, I woke up inside my dream and then it happened again. Like, it was nuts. But I mean, outside of that, I've had some odd things happen in dreams, but that was back when I slept a lot more hours. Now I don't dream very often. So
I don't really have those type of memory dreams, but I can tell when Michelle does. And I can tell when Dream Pierre probably wasn't the best character in those dreams. When you wake up and you get like me mugged and you've been asleep for, you know, 7-8 hours, you know there's possibly nothing that you could have done wrong. And you're like, oh, Dream Pierre was at it again. He that guy's a wild guy, I tell you. True. I cannot be held accountable for the things that Dream Pierre does in Michelle's dreams. I want that on record.
I haven't had that in a very long time, but he's not wrong. And it's very real, so it made me very mad. But my best friend does have those dreams a lot. And God very clearly, and I think I've said that before, very clearly speaks to her in her dreams. And it's cool, but it's also a little scary sometimes, like, because it's usually not great if she's dreamt about somebody. And so if she tells me she had a dream about me, I'm like, why? What's going on? So, but he does speak to her that way.
I knew Pierre. I knew that Michelle would have some kind of dream story. I did. I just did. You know, I jumped to verse 40 or chapter 40. I jumped to chapter 40. God has talked to Job for a little while. Job has made his petitions to God and questioned God and all his friends and all that stuff. Is there. And then I love what God says to Job in verse 6. Then the Lord answered Job from a whirlwind. Now, I don't know what that means. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't know what that means. What's a whirlwind? How's he answering him in a whirlwind? It's the opposite of the still small voice that was in a breeze. That was answering one of the prophets, I believe. And God said, brace yourself like a man because I got some questions for you and you got to answer them. That's just a strong statement. You know, could you imagine hearing that from God? It's like, oh no, not only do I have boils all over me, but I think I just tinkled down my leg too.
Yeah.
Well, he's been questioning too. So Joe's been, he's been kind of letting God have it. You know, he wants the answers. Now you're about to get them. You're like, well, maybe I don't want the answers anymore.
There's a lot of things in here, Pierre, that I could look at and I start questioning. You know, I could say in verse 13 of that same chapter, Job 40, take a look at the behemoth, which I made just as I made you. It eats grass like an ox, sees its powerful loins and its muscles of its belly. What is the behemoth? You know, that's what I want to know. Is it the elephant? Is it the rhinoceros? I listened to that one a couple of times and I'm like, probably a hippopotamus. That's what I was thinking, you know, but it is called it something.
Its own creature that's no longer around.
Yeah. And it could be, it could be, but it's kind of cool to look at. And earlier, I think it's in Job mentions the Leviathan in there. And it's like, okay, what's the Leviathan? You know, you kind of want to know what it is.
An alligator or sea. It's a sea monster. Who knows?
Hey, and this is, I looked it up. It's the New Living Translation. This is, and I'm telling you, they start talking about a dragon. They start talking about a dragon in here is what it is, because it sounds like a alligator that flies through the air and has smoke and fire, you know, and so it sounds like a dragon.
It's quite possible. I know humans have evolved, but I can't see that some human just simply made up the dragon that comes from somewhere, and it could be the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, there's so many drawings of it. I don't want to say pictures, but drawings of it in just old things that I've seen ever since I was a kid that looked like they were really old whenever I was a kid. Just seeing pictures of them, and it's kind of like, oh, I assumed that dragons were dragons. And I never thought, are they fictitious or were they real? I never thought that, because it looked like a dinosaur to me, and a dinosaur was always real, as I was told. So I just put it in the same category as a dinosaur.
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's just it. There's so many things that are unknown, and I think that's kind of what God, you know, goes into with Job when he's answering some of his questions.
Yeah, I think so too. Is that, hey, there's a lot of things, Job, that you don't know, but they are. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell me that they're not, because you see the after effects, or you see the, I guess, the evidence of them. You know that a goat and the lion in the mountains has babies, because you see the evidence of it, but you've never seen one. I have. Job, you've never seen a little baby eagle. I have. Are they called eaglets?
I have no idea.
Little baby eagles?
They're
called eaglets. Yeah, they got to be called eaglets.
That's right.
You've never seen them, Job, but I have. But you see the evidence of them. And that speaks to there being a creator, right? Because we don't get to see the actual creation of some things, but we see the evidence of it, which makes us say, okay, well, something had to always be, right? Something mm-hmm. had to always be, because there's always been something.
Yeah.
It has to be the case. And that's why, like, I just can't get behind the whole big boom stuff. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Things are too laid out perfectly for it to just be a series of coincidences, that chemicals blending together to all, you know, make this perfect, you know, rotating earth, the sun rising when it's supposed to, the moon, the human body and how it functions, all the other animals and, you know, how their body functions, the mind, the heart, how everything kind of goes together. Like, how can you just spontaneously have a combustion and all that just fall into place? That just, for me, it doesn't add up. Like, I know everyone has their own beliefs. Everyone has their faith in something. Whether it's faith or nothing, they have that faith there, and that's just not something I can put my faith in, as just a random combustion, knowing all the things that I know right now.
Speaking of random combustion, I was just looking at that at the Leviathan again, and everything there in chapter 41, I guess it is. I want to emphasize Leviathan's limbs, God says, and its enormous strength and graceful form. Who can strip off its hide? Who can penetrate its double layer of armor? Who can pry open its jaws? For its teeth are terrible. The scale on its back are like rows of shields tightly sealed together. They are so close together that no air can get between them. Each scale sticks tight to the next. They interlock and cannot be penetrated. When it sneezes, it flashes light. Its eyes are like the red of the dawn. Lightning leaps from its mouth. Flames of fire flash out. Smoke streams from its nostrils like steam from a pot heated over burning rushes. Its breath would kindle coals, for flames shoot from its mouth. The tremendous strength in Leviathan's neck strikes terror wherever it goes. And that's got to be a dragon.
Sounds like it to me.
It does. It does sound like a dragon. Leviathan the dragon. Is that a book?
Could be.
Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah, we got Leviathan the Dragon. Oh yeah. Let's do it, Les.
Leviathan makes the water boil with its commotion. It stirs the depths like a pot of ointment. The water glistens in its wake, making the sea look white. Nothing on earth is its equal. No other creature is so fearless. Of all the creatures, it is the proudest. It is the king of the beasts. That makes me stop and just go, what in the world is going on, you know?
Well, I mean, that and the behemoth. So you like kind of put them both together, and there's some fear there with kind of the descriptions. But even with that, there's some majesty that takes place in just the power of these beasts that are being described. So it's a good and bad. It's like a good and evil type of thing, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout all that, God essentially, I think, in the gist of it all, even though we don't understand everything, you got to look at the big picture of it. If it's a play, you got to kind of look at the whole thing and just let it be summarized for you a little bit. God does like rock does. God says to Job, he says, what's your name, Job? What's your name? And Job's about to say his name, and God says, it doesn't matter what your name is. Be quiet and know your role, right?
That's right. Know your role and shut your mouth, right?
And then he tells Job's friends kind of the same thing, except he tells his friends, hey, you didn't speak of me the same way Job did. You spoke wrongly of me. You need to go make a sacrifice to kind of get back right with me. And then, I'm sure they ran to go do the sacrifice, by the way, because they seen what Job was going through. They didn't want to go through the same thing. But you know, God is just letting Job know, his friends know, what their role is. And I think it's the same role for us. We're to be good stewards of the things that we have, whether that's our health, whether that's riches, whether that's whatever it is. We need to be good stewards of what we have. Time, we need to be good stewards with that as well. And we need to make the most of it. We don't know when we'll get afflicted with something that isn't necessarily from God. God may allow it, but it's for us to look like, it's for us to make God look like champion. Okay? That's what I think suffering is for us to make God look like a champion.
Mm-hmm.
And we're to know our role and to go through it. If we're in an army, which, you know, the Bible talks about a Christian being in an army, a soldier, then we're to do whatever we're commanded to do. And sometimes that's a tough thing to do. I know for me, I've become a better man since I've had children, right? Since I've been a husband, I've become a better handyman around the house. That's what kind of man I've become. And I've had to do some dirty things. The other day, my daughter's sink was just clogged. I guess it's the girl's sink. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I got the 17-year-old. I got the 8-year-old. The 17-year-old's got makeup and hair and junk in there, you know. And then the 8-year-old comes running in with a bunch of rocks, and so she's cleaning off rocks in the sink, and there's just dirt and rocks in the sink. And finally, the thing was backed up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But before I had kids, I never had to unclog a sink, and and I never had to get underneath there and undo the little. Nuts and bolts from underneath there, whatever it is, and undo it, get the bucket and let the water drip in there. And then you take it out. And I called the teenager in there because I wanted the teenager to know how to do this, first of all, because I anticipate her having many a clogged sink in her life.
I'm sure you're right.
So I do it, and she, ew, you know, and this gray black water is coming out, ew. And I don't have to tell the 8-year-old to come in there. She's my little helper, so she's always in wherever I am. She's my little shadow, and she's, you know, oh, cool, you know, she likes the dirt. And I showed my daughter, my 17-year-old, I pull this big thing of hair out from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure do.
But, you know, as a good soldier of my house, that's my role. That's what I got to do. It's not fun. It's disgusting. I don't enjoy it, but it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my role. Sometimes I have to go through these things that I don't necessarily want to do. in a position, crawled under the sink on my back that I don't want to be in, but I got to do it because that's what I'm supposed to do.
And I think that's true. I mean, I've said over and over again through, you know, these episodes and just in general that, you know, the suffering that we go through does, at least for me, it makes me more thankful than I ever would have known how to be in the good times without it. And oftentimes it draws me much closer to God because I have to rely on Him. And so it's like, it's a teaching moment and a blessing in disguise a lot of times. I just think that we're not apt to learn the lessons the way that we do if we don't go through the suffering or the frustrations or loss or whatever that we go through. I've said before, I appreciate Pierre and Olivia in entirely different way than I ever would have even fathomed how to do before my miscarriage or from bad relationships or, loss of loved ones, whatever it might be. So I think that, you know, it's perspective in those things and how you look at it and then what you do with it.
That wasn't my fault. The sink wasn't my fault, right?
No,
it wasn't. I had to do it because that was my role and that's just what I have to do. And I was paying the price, though, of what other people's – I was paying the consequences for other people's decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I was changing the oil the other day, and I do this. I don't know if anybody else changes. Pierre, do you change your oil of your cars?
Nope.
I enjoy doing it. I got a lot of cars and vehicles, bread trucks. I got to do it. When you change the oil, I got this big drain pan thing. Well, I forgot to take the plug out of the middle of the drain pan. And I was changing the oil in my truck first because I hate doing that one. It's just got all kinds of things that I got to get out of the way. It's just the hardest one to change. So I changed it in my truck first. And the oil was still hot, warm, hot. It was hot on the warm side, but warm on the hot side. Mm-hmm. And so the oil started accumulating in the pan, right? And I said, what is it? Stopped up. Oh, I forgot to take the drain plug out. So I hurried up and took the, I was like, oh, I got to stick my hand in there. It's going to be kind of hot. And I went ahead and did it anyway. Otherwise I was going to have oil all over the place. So I put my hand in there and I twisted it real quick and I got it out and I started rubbing it off, but it was hot. And I was a little, my hand burned a little bit, burned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my decision, right? That was my mistake. I had to suffer my own consequences, but I had to do it again. You know, I had to do something at that time because that's just what I had to do. But it was by my own fault. There are things that we're going to run into in life where it's not our fault. Sometimes it is our fault. But whatever it is, we just have to tackle it head on and we have to get through it knowing that God is on our side the entire time. And if He is for us, then who can be against us? What are we going to face that God has not already known what was going to happen, that God has not faced? If we can entrust our lives into our Creator's hands, then whatever comes our way, we can just turn over into His hands and let Him help us with it. Mm-hmm. That no matter what it is.
I think that's what Job what he had to learn. I don't like the way he had to learn it personally. That's just my opinion, but I mean, that's what he ultimately had to walk away with. Like, cause he's asking questions. He's calling God unjust. And God's basically saying, you know, you're not in a position to make that that decision that I'm unjust. And ultimately tells Joe, we live in a non-perfect world. And that's kind of why suffering takes place. This is a fallen world. It's non-perfect. But if we truly believe He's a perfect God, then we have to trust Him. And sometimes it's hard to trust without that conversation. So, you know, Joe ultimately got his answers from God. And I feel like it's difficult if you don't feel like you're getting those answers in the same situation. Maybe you're not at a boiling point like Job was to where, you know, where God maybe is hearing you. But I think that's kind of what brought Job out of it was the fact that he got his answers clearly from God and was told to just trust me. And when you've lost everything, you have nothing left. When you've lost it all, I mean, how hard is it to trust at that point when you you have nothing else to lose. If you get the word from God to trust him, you have no other point. You have no other way to go at that point. So I think that's what took place with Job. And again, I'm not sure his choices were what led him to his downfall. But he got in that situation, so he then had choices on whether he was going to trust God or not once he was in that circumstance.
Chapter 42, verse 7, after the Lord had finished speaking these things to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, I am angry with you and your two friends, for you have not spoken accurately about me as my servant Job has. So take 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and offer a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you, and I will accept his prayer on your behalf. I will not treat you as you deserve, for you have not spoken accurately about me as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz and Temanite and Bildad the Shuhite and Zophar the Nephite did as the Lord commanded them, and the Lord accepted Job's prayer. When Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes. In fact, the Lord gave him twice as much as before. I love how, even though you think Job was angry at God, questioning God at the very least, absolutely. You know,
I think you could even say that Job also didn't speak correctly. But God just kind of showed him mercy because of how he went about things versus his friend.
I agree. When I heard God say that, I was like, really? God, he didn't say anything bad. It sure sounded like he was saying bad stuff. That's what I was thinking. But maybe it was the heart and intentions of the heart too. You know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what it was there. That did strike me as peculiar, but I love how God, even though like him and Job didn't seem to be buddy buddies at the time, when God's saying, gird yourself up like a man, you know, I'm ready to ask you some. Then he just turns around, though, and he says, you didn't speak well of me like my servant Job did. You know,
yeah.
You go and make these offerings and my servant Job will pray for you. And I think that's cool. Yeah. Job never left God's side. In his heart of hearts, I don't think that he left God's side. Maybe in his mind, he was thinking out loud, and maybe he was questioning things. Maybe he wasn't doing it to everybody in the entire world, just these three friends, you know, and his wife maybe too. We won't even go into his wife because I don't want you in trouble, Pierre.
But, I mean, I am curious why she was the one that was left. It's like, if Satan like didn't touch her, like, wait a minute, was she part of the problem? But anyway.
Even Paul had a thorn in his side. Paul had a thorn in his side too, Pierre, so I don't know. But I just love how God looked at Job as still being his servant throughout all that and counted him as the one who was going to pray for his friends. I think that was really cool, even though Job was obviously struggling. And then, Michelle, as you know, Job was restored, and he received twice as much as he had before.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great example it had to be, not only to Job's friends, immediate friends there, but into all the land about him. Because I don't think this is a made-up story. This is something I was thinking about, too, while I was listening to it. Is this just a made-up story? Is Job just a made-up story? But once again, as we talked about in prior episodes, we learn names, first names, maybe last names, or at least their kind of genealogy or where they're from. Where they lived, you know, we learn all these things. There's specifics about this. So I don't think this is a made up story. I think this is a specific story, and we actually get to see what's going on. If it's a play, we get to see what's going on behind the scenes too, with that spiritual realm of things and the physical realm of things, so we can have things make more sense to us. But Michelle, getting all that stuff restored to twice the amount, That had to be a great testimony to all those people around him.
Oh, I can't imagine that it wasn't. I mean, if I'm witnessing that and I see it, like, I'm going to be like, okay, I see he went through all of that, but boy, is he blessed. And so he's doing something right. And it's like you said, it's a great example.
Yeah.
We see definitely. It in life. Like,
yeah.
We see it in each other. Like, folks down on their luck and hit rock bottom and you come across them years later and, you know, gosh, restored them and changed their lives. So it's, it's good to see those moments, and sometimes you don't. And that's the thing. So sometimes there's not that Job ending where someone is restored and you start to, you know, question. So why is that? Why didn't they get potentially restored on their own circumstances? But that's, again, that's not for us to be the judge of. But yeah, it's good to see those wins when people get knocked down, everything mm-hmm. gets taken away from them, and they're brought up again. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? God picks them up, and was Jeremy Camp, you know, he's lost. Yep, the artist right. lost his wife, and you know, they battle with cancer, and I know he's remarried now, has multiple kids, really big time Christian artist. So things like that happen in real life. It's not just a Job story.
Well, and I think sometimes we can perceive that someone is struggling, and really they're not. Like, and what I mean by that is, I spent most of my life probably thinking that, like, my brother who was disabled was struggling or you know, had his own issues, and that, you know, why did he have to be that way? And I remember very vividly the day that I found out I was pregnant for Olivia, saw a lady at a doctor's appointment I had to go to, and she ended up being the first person I told that I was pregnant, and she had a son who was disabled, but he was walking and talking and my brother couldn't. And I remember thinking, man, what I wouldn't give to have a conversation with him. And it was years later that, you know, as I'm kind of reading through the Bible, I'm like, wow, Michelle, that's really selfish of you, because my brother, who passed away last week, was truly the happiest person I have ever known. And he is fully restored now. And I remember that when it hit me that I was selfish for wanting to have like that conversation with him, because if he's happy and God made him the way that he wanted him, if he could know how hurtful and cruel this world could be, or understand maybe his circumstances a little better, would he have been as happy as he was? And I don't think so. So he was just such an inspiration. He was the biggest smile literally you've ever seen. And, you know, smile through your suffering and smile through your circumstances. So I think that's a beautiful thing. And hopefully that can be an inspiration to others, because he truly was and is still. So yeah, smile.
Smile, no matter what. There's that, one of those fantasy football ladies, Pierre, that does that weekly roundup kind of the NFL.
Yeah.
I think her and her brother might have cerebral palsy or something, and her dad is like runs with him on marathons and stuff like that. I think that's the whole connection there with that as well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, you just don't know what kind of impact that, I mean, he clearly had an impact on people, and he did on me for sure. And it was a beautiful thing to see at his service, and to hear all of the stories and things about, you know, this boy, this man who couldn't walk or talk, had this profound impact on people, and it's beautiful. So mm-hmm. I can only pray to have that much impact.
And I think I thought you were talking about Wes. I think I met her at the one of the Hall of Fame games, and I can't bring her up because I don't want Michelle getting mad.
Michelle, we are sorry for your loss. I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of the Finding Faith and Losing Sleep squad that's out there, I believe, so we could say that for sure. And we are, all of us get touched by different individuals at different times in our life, and they all have their purposes, and we are thankful that Job had his purpose in our life as well, to give us strength whenever we are weak. And we can see that if we are good soldiers, we can make it through, and God will be faithful to the end no matter what. Pierre, we failed to tell anybody how to find us. We failed to encourage anybody to leave, you know, any kind of ratings or anything on the listening platform to help the show get out there a little bit more, to encourage others, not for our sake at all. Pierre, we haven't made a dime off this show, right?
We have not. That's been by choice. I still get like ad opportunities like
really?
A couple times a week. But
do they want me to talk in any of them?
They do not. They do not. It's more wanting to play, you know, snippets of their show on ours so they can kind of probably increase their listenership. But it's all right. I mean, we're not doing that for that. We're doing that just to kind of talk through life and talk through the things that keep us up at night. But if you do, again, have any comments, suggestions, you can reach out to us at findingfaith.losingsleep@gmail.com. We're also over on the Twitter/X machine at Finding Faith Pod. You can find us on any podcast platform. So feel free to leave us a review, leave us comments there. We appreciate anything you want us to touch on, anything you want us to ask. Definitely shoot it our way and we will engage.
Yep. And we say that about the podcast platforms because you could share it with your friends on whatever you'd like to share it with in hopes to encourage them as well somehow, some way. If we've done that for you, we ask that you do that for someone else.